Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter Number 7, Further Inquiries by Bhadra, Text 41. Sarve Vedascha Yagyascha
Sarve Vedascha Yagyascha
Tapodana Nichanaka
Tapodana Nichanaka
Jivabhya Pradhanasya Nakurviran Kalamapi Vedaha, divisions of the Vedas, Cha, also, Yagya, sacrifices, Cha, also, Tapaha, penances, Danani, charities, Cha, and Anagha, O spotless one, Jiva, the living entity, Abhaya, immunity from material pangs, Pradhanasya, of one who gives such assurance, Na, not, Kurviran, can be equalized, Kalam, even partially, Api, certainly. Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. O spotless one, your answers to all these questions will grant immunity from all material miseries. Such charity is greater than all Vedic charities, sacrifices, penances, etc. Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The highest perfectional work of charity is to give people in general immunity from the anxieties of material existence. This can be done only by performing activities in devotional service to the Lord. Such knowledge is incomparable. Cultivation of the knowledge in the Vedas, performance of sacrifice, and distribution of munificent charities altogether cannot form even a part of the immunity from the pangs of material existence that is gained from devotional service. The charity of Maitreya not only will help Vidura, but due to its universal nature will deliver all others in all times. Thus Maitreya is immortal. Translation again. O spotless one, your answers to all these questions will grant immunity from all material miseries. Such charity is greater than all Vedic charities, sacrifices, penances, etc. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So here, this is about the end of the 7th chapter. So Vidura has posed a number of questions. So we see, not only in this chapter, but even in chapter 5 of this canto, Vidura posed some very important questions. And then Maitreya Muni, who he met in his travels at Haridwar, he met Maitreya Muni on the request of Uddhava, who told him to meet Maitreya and get enlightened from him. So when he met Maitreya Muni, he asked him some questions. Does anyone remember what questions Vidur asked Maitreya in chapter 5? On what subjects? Yes, creation. He asked him about the Purushavatars and the role of the Purushavatars in creation. Yes, that's correct. Anything else? Anyone remembers? He also asked about the universal form, the Virat Rupa. So in chapter 6, which was the previous chapter, we heard the the description of the universal form in great detail by Maitreya Muni. And he also asked, Vidura asked Maitreya Muni about the Leela Avatars, which he hasn't yet described. And he also asked about the different living creatures created by Lord Narayan. So these were the main questions he asked in chapter 5. And then chapter 6, the universal form was described. And even in chapter 7, it began with Vidura's inquiries from Maitreya again. So he asked some very important questions, like, if the Lord is unchangeable, then how is he connected to the material modes and the resultant material activities, if he's unchangeable? And he asked, and how does the unchangeable Lord's activities take place? And how does he exhibit qualities which are free from the modes of material nature? And then, you know, very relevant question here, how does a pure soul become engaged in nescience? And then, if God is in everyone's heart, then basically why are we suffering? Why are people suffering? Why are there activities leading to misfortune and misery if Krishna is situated in the heart of every living entity as a super soul? And even after that, from verses 21 onwards, so many questions were asked by Vidura about so many different topics. And here we see Vidura is praising his own questions, because he's saying, you know, the answers to the questions I've asked will grant immunity from all material miseries. So he's in other words glorifying his own questions, because he knows his questions are of relevance to the world's welfare. Even we see in chapter 5 of the third canto, Maitreya Muni, when he was asked by Vidura all these questions which I mentioned before, those four questions on those four topics, he glorified Vidura, and he said, he makes an interesting statement which is quite similar to today's verse. Sri Maitreya said, O Vidura, all glory unto you. You have inquired from me of the greatest of all goodness, and thus you have shown your mercy both to the world and to me, because your mind is always absorbed in thoughts of transcendence. So here we also see that Maitreya Muni is glorifying Vidura's questions, because such questions are for the relevance of the world. Not only are they for the benefit of the world, but they are even for the benefit of the speaker. And we see even in the first canto, in the very beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, the sages of Naimisharanya, headed by Shaunaka Rishi, they glorified Shukdev Goswami, and then they put a series of questions to him. The first chapter is, Questions by the Sages. Is that what it's called? What's the title of the first chapter? Questions by the Sages, yes. So the first chapter was full of questions by the sages of Naimisharanya, headed by Shaunaka Rishi. And then in chapter 2, Shukdev Goswami, the questions are answered, right? To Sudha Goswami, he puts them, sorry, not Shukdev. Shukdev comes much later in Canto 2, his entrance is there. But to Sudha Goswami, these questions were put. And then Sudha Goswami, he begins to answer them. So, you know, there's that famous verse, Munaya Sadhu Prishtoham Bhavadbir Lokamangalam Yat Krita Krishna Samprashno Yanatma Suprasidati. So there Sutta Goswami says, O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. So he says, your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. And he says, only questions of this sort are capable of satisfying the self. So here again we see that even Sutta Goswami, he confirms the same point in the beginning of the Bhagavatam, that only questions of this sort meaning questions of a transcendental nature, because they relate to Lord Krishna, and therefore they are of relevance to the world's welfare. Even Vidura, in tomorrow's verse we will hear, he says that, because in this chapter he asks so many questions, and one might think, how is this, you know, what does this have to do with Krishna? He was asking about Varnashram, he's asking about time, he's asking about, you know, so many other things, about dharma, you know, law and order, so many topics were covered. So one might think, you know, what does this have to do? But it has to do with Krishna. In tomorrow's verse we hear, He asked these questions. Oh, sorry. In the verse before, in yesterday's verse, yeah, we heard that I have put all these questions before you with a view to knowing the pastimes of Lord Hari. So all these questions are put with a view to knowing Lord Krishna and his pastimes. So all these things are connected to Krishna. We see, like, you know, for a common person, you cannot tell them straight away about the pastimes of Lord Krishna. So, you know, even we see in Bhagavad Gita, first Krishna talks about how we are not the body. So Krishna establishes that we are the spirit soul. Then he talks about karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga. He talks about all and so many other things he talks about. And then the conclusion is, you surrender unto me. In various sections of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you know, the highest perfection of life is to surrender unto me, to think about me, to worship me, and so on and so forth. But to bring a common person straight away to this platform is not possible, because they don't have any preliminary understanding. So the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, they have so many topics there. And they all are connected to Lord Krishna. And we see that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that such questions, you know, which we hear, they are the sum and substance of Vedic inquiry. Because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Veda ishta sarvair aham eva vedya. Krishna says, by all the Vedas I am to be known. Right? He says that in the Bhagavad Gita. I am the compiler of the Vedanta. I'm the knower of the Vedas, and by all the Vedas I am to be known. So we see that such inquiries are the sum and substance of Vedic, that all these inquiries, they are a sum and substance of Vedic inquiries. So especially in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are so many inquiries. So these inquiries are the sum and substance of Vedic inquiries. So we see that by nature we have a propensity to inquire. Srila Prabhupada makes this point. Everyone is inquiring from somebody else about something. So this inquiry is going on, not only in human life, but even in other species. We see even in other species, the birds, the beasts, they're inquiring from each other. And their inquiries are generally on the platform of Annamaya, you know, about on food. Where can I get food? So they are about eating, sleeping, mating and defending. But even in the human form of life, so many inquiries are being made, but they are basically on these four things. Eating, sleeping, mating and defending. So there, even on the ABC, there is one program, it's called Q&A. And very materially articulate people, you know, are there, very intelligent people are there, and they're asking so many questions. And in their questions, they're trying to solve the problems of the world. That's what they're trying to do. They're trying to solve so many material problems. So they usually have a panel there of very distinguished and notable people from society. And then there are people there who are asking, and some are sending SMS or asking on television. The questions are coming there. You can see them. And they're trying to solve problems. But the result is that the problems are not being solved. In fact, the problems are increasing. And not only that no one leaves their you know, fully satisfied at heart. So problems are not being solved and people are not satisfied at heart also, even after asking all these questions. So that's very a practical demonstration. In fact, these things only agitate the mind even more. But here, as we heard in what Sutta Goswami is saying, that only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. Only such transcendental questions, questions which relate to Lord Krishna, they can satisfy the heart. And the proof is that when such questions and answers take place amongst devotees, devotees become enlivened. Generally, we don't leave a Srimad Bhagavatam class, you know, morose or depressed. We leave the Srimad Bhagavatam class, I hope, enlivened, you know. Even if the speaker is not very good, you know, is not speaking, you know, even if we feel the speaker is not doing justice to the verse, but still, we can get one or two points out of it, and we leave enlivened. Or even if we just hear the purport and the translation, we should be enlivened, because this is related to Lord Krishna. So in some sections, Lord Krishna's pastimes are not directly discussed. Other things are discussed, and other sections they are directly discussed. But it is all connected to Krishna. So that produces ecstasy. That produces, we are enlivened. And we see even in the beginning of this canto, third canto, when Vidura, he posed so many questions to Uddhava. Uddhava, he went into ecstasy. He was unable to speak for some time. He went into anxiety because of remembering Krishna. So he was unable to speak, and you know, he went in ecstasy. So even in tomorrow's verse, we see Maitreya. He was very much enlivened by speaking on the transcendental activities of the Lord. So we see that such questions and answers, which are related to Lord Krishna, they lead to enlivenment, and they lead to, you know, one becomes satisfied and happy. That's the result. But we can see very practically, if we are just reading newspapers all day, or we're reading magazines, or you know, mundane literature, we become agitated and we become frustrated. It's very, devotees can see that, because we have higher knowledge, we have a higher taste. But for a common person, they might not know that. And people even say that in preaching, when we come across people, they read Bhagavad Gita, Krishna book, Srimad Bhagavatam, and they themselves, they even say that, you know, by reading this, I feel my consciousness being purified. So it is very, very practical. And Prabhupada says that in the purport to this 125 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says that by reading the Srimad Bhagavatam, one can make an all-around solution to all problems pertaining to social, political, or religious matters. So it's interesting, Prabhupada says that. So with the Srimad Bhagavatam, one can make an all-round solution to all problems, whether they're social, they're political, or they're religious of matters. So if we see, you know, what's going on Q&A on TV, the matters are pertaining to social, political, and religious. Prabhupada is spot on over there. But if the members, they are well versed in Srimad Bhagavatam, then they can make a solution to these problems using the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam, it talks about all these things. And even in this chapter, Vidura, he asked about, you know, all topics pertaining to such matters. So we see, and even in the preface to the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said, one can make an all-around solution to the problems of life. And even one of the characteristics of devotional service is klesha agni. It is said that, in other words, relief from material distress. So when one engages in devotional service, there is relief from material distress. So we are suffering because of, basically because of sinful activities. So because of our previous sinful activities, we are suffering. So in other words, we are under the influence of karma because of our previous activities. And any suffering, anything which is happening to us, is because of our karma. We don't know what shape it will take, but you know, the suffering is destined. It can take this shape or that shape. So that's happening because of our karma. So, but when we engage in devotional service, it destroys our prarabdha and aprarabdha karma. In other words, it destroys our manifest suffering and our unmanifest suffering. And not only that, by engaging in devotional service, very simple activities of hearing, chanting, you know, remembering about Krishna, even just having a Bhagavatam class, then chanting the holy names, doing japa, engaging in service all day, making friendship with devotees. By the 9 items of devotional service, even the desire to engage in sinful activities and the proclivity is destroyed as well. The tendencies, the strong tendencies, are also destroyed. And above all that, the root cause, which is ignorance, is also destroyed. So ignorance of Krishna, and that is destroyed as well. So then one is free of suffering. So when we engage in Krishna Katha, as it is mentioned here, that will grant one immunity from all material miseries. So material miseries are because of sinful activities. And sinful activity is there because of ignorance, basically because of ignorance. So that ignorance is destroyed by transcendental knowledge and by engaging in devotional service. So that is the power of bhakti. So these activities, they look very simple. You know, doing service, which we do on a daily basis, they look very simple, but they have a very powerful effect. Who said it? I think Srila Prabhupada said, if you clap in kirtan, the lines on your palm they'll be erased. So meaning that if we engage in devotional service, our karma, it's not necessary our karma will apply to us. It's Krishna karma. Krishna takes charge of the devotees. So ordinarily, we are under the laws of nature, and we have to, if we're not performing devotional service, we have to suffer our karma. And you know, so people go to astrologers to know their karma. You know, astrology is very big, especially in India. And for devotees, yes, it depends. It's hard to say. It can change depending on to what degree one is seriously practicing Krishna consciousness. You know, one's karma can apply or not apply. That depends on Krishna. It's not up to a It's up to the Supreme Lord. So for devotees, sometimes it's hard to predict their astrology. For those who are especially very advanced devotees, like we see with Prabhupada. You know, Prabhupada said his astrology was he would be one of the richest men in India. It is said in the Leelamrita that the astrologer said he would be one of the richest men in India and one of the most successful businessmen. But it didn't turn out that way. Krishna made Prabhupada the pauper. You know, Krishna had other plans. So Krishna wanted him to be, you know, fail in his business. And he wanted him to spread Krishna consciousness in a different way. Prabhupada's plan was to become very rich, use money and his influence and power, etc., in spreading Krishna consciousness. But Krishna had other plans for Prabhupada. So that's an example where we see, for pure devotees, it's not like that. So the point is, devotional service, it frees one from material miseries. And the example given is Devahuti. She She speaks to Lord Kapila in the third canto, chapter 33, text number 6. This is from the Nectar of Devotion. This quotation is there. That if one engages in performing the 9 items of devotional service, then even a dog eater, even someone who's a dog eater, they can perform sacrifices. They can become qualified to perform sacrifices. So that's just amazing. In other words, one's karma is destroyed. And one can even perform the activities of a brahmana. So that is the power of devotional service. So here it is said, such charity is greater than all Vedic charities, sacrifices, penances, etc. So Krishna consciousness, or in other words, Krishna consciousness is the highest charity. So devotional service, giving Krishna to others, is the highest charity one can perform. No other charity is equal to equal to Krishna consciousness. You know, giving Krishna to others. So in other words, no other charity is equal to preaching. Preaching is the highest form of charity one can give to someone, because it connects one to Krishna. Because the root cause of our suffering is ignorance, is forgetfulness of Krishna. And by preaching, we are basically reminding people of the relationship with Krishna. And in doing that, they can transcend all miseries and put an end to the cycle of birth and death. So forgetfulness of Krishna is the root cause of all suffering. Identification with the body and engaging in fruitive activities leads to repeated births and deaths. But by reviving our dormant loving relationship with Krishna, we can put an end to that. Therefore, that is the highest charity. So we see that the Vedas, they prescribed so many charities, sacrifices and penances. And it is recommended that one not give them up. The Vedas are full of charities, different types of charities. You know, sacrifices and penances. But the purpose of all that is to gradually uplift the conditioned soul. That's the idea behind that. So that's like giving an incentive to conditioned souls who don't want to serve Krishna. So they are encouraged to perform these activities so they can gradually become elevated. And in doing these activities, there is an element of bhakti as well, as His Holiness Bhanu Swami was mentioning in his talks. That when one does karma yoga, jnana yoga, you know, ashtanga, etc., if it's yoga, then there is an element of bhakti. Because yoga means connection with Krishna, connection with the Supreme. So there is an element of bhakti. So when so many sacrifices are done, they're chanting Om. They might even say the name of Vishnu. And even Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, the purpose of all sacrifices is to please Him. The purpose of all sacrifices is to please Vishnu. So in all these sacrifices, the pleasure of Vishnu is there to some degree. And Krishna says in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, He says that acts of sacrifice, charity and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity and penance purify even the great souls. So even Krishna says that such acts should not be given up. And we see in the 12th chapter, there's different gradations. If someone cannot perform pure bhakti, they cannot render spontaneous devotional service, then it is said one should follow the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti, bhakti yoga. If one cannot do that, then one should perform karma yoga. You know, give up the results to the Supreme Lord. If one cannot do that, then one should maybe do some charity, even if it's mundane charity. The idea being that one should become detached from the fruits of activities. Because being attached to the fruits of our activities, or is the root cause of, you know, repeated birth and death. That's pushing on the samsara chakra, the attachment to our fruitive activities. So in that sense, charity is good. And Krishna also talks about the three types of charities, sacrifices and penances in the Bhagavad Gita. Charity in the mode of goodness, passion and ignorance. So charity in the mode of goodness is, let's read it out, it's in the 17th chapter. Krishna says, charity given out of duty, without expectation of return, at the proper time and place, and to a worthy person, is considered to be charity in the mode of goodness. So Krishna is what he says. This is charity in the mode of goodness. So the main thing is, it is without expectation of return, and it is done out of duty, and to the proper person. Right, so such charity is generally given to the brahmanas to some spiritual cause, to further some spiritual cause, to the devotees or the brahmanas. One donates in temples for a spiritual purpose. Then charity in the mode of passion is performed with some expectation of some return, or with a desire for fruitive results, or in a grudging mood. You know, sometimes we see people give charity, but they're giving in a grudging mood. They don't really want to give, but alright, okay, let's take it. You know, they're being canvassed for donations for, you know, whatever project, and out of grudging, just to get rid of you, you know, especially on book distribution we see. We're asking for charity. And sometimes they just want to get rid of you. So grudgingly they give a donation, they give charity. And sometimes they even say charity, charity, give charity, because they can relate to charity. So sometimes even charity can be given for spiritual causes, but it can be given in a grudging mood. So, and it can be given with some expectation of return. So that can be charity in the mode of passion. And then charity in the mode of ignorance. Charity performed at an impure place, at an improper time, to unworthy persons, or without proper attention and respect, is said to be in the mode of ignorance. So now we need to see that the charity taking place mostly in the world is, if we make an impartial study, it is actually in the mode of ignorance. So these days people are not even performing Vedic charities, penances and sacrifices, which have an element of bhakti in it, and they gradually uplift the conditioned soul. So in Kali Yuga, we see in modern times, charity is being performed in the mode of ignorance, because it is performed most of the time at an impure place, at an improper time. And it is given to unworthy persons. That's very common. Charity is given to unworthy persons. You know, money is given to people who don't know how to use that money. Without proper attention and respect. And these days, charities are not given for spiritual causes. You know, for the upliftment of mankind spiritually. Those types of charities are not there. If you ask someone, you know, can you give me some money for so I can hold a Harinam Sankirtan, you know, they say, you know, what's the value of that? I want to give to some, you know, to some cancer society or someone who's materially, you know, body is suffering. That's the charity people can relate to. So it's interesting, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in one of his quotes, he says, to transform adverse desires of the jivas is the supreme duty of the most merciful. To rescue one person from the stronghold of Mahamaya is an act of superb benevolence. far superior to opening innumerable hospitals. I remember this quote. It's there in the Brahmachari Ashram, in the study room. There's an A3, it's a laminated A3 paper, and there's the quotes of, there's some quotes from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and this is one of them. He says that preaching is far superior to opening innumerable hospitals. So this requires a great deal of faith, even for us. So these preaching centers like Urban Yoga, Mantra Lounge, you know, etc., etc. So these are like hospitals, you know. These are spiritual hospitals where and these are far superior to other hospitals. So an ordinary person might take offense at this statement because this is putting them on a much higher level. Because to transform the adverse desires of the jiva is the supreme duty, and this is much superior. So we see with other forms of charities, they're trying to rescue the body of the living entity. Basically, that's most of the time it's about the body, and maybe if it's a little bit more exalted, it is about fixing the mind of someone. It doesn't go much higher than that, fixing the body and the mind. Mind in terms of psychological problems, psychiatric problems, etc. So mental health is now, you know, considered of prime importance. Before, mental health wasn't considered very important, 30, 40 years ago. But now they recognize the value of that. But Krishna consciousness is about transforming the desires of the living entity. You know, the fire of desire. Because desire is causing all the problems. So Krishna consciousness is about purifying the desire of the conditioned living entity and making him Krishna conscious. So such centers are about the temples, and such preaching centers. In such places also, you know, Q&As are taking place. It's nothing but questions and answers. But such questions and answers, they will grant our audience immunity from material miseries. And they will also purify the preachers. Those who are engaging in such outreach work, there is rapid transformation. My spiritual master, he puts it this way. Transformation through distribution. So through distribution of Krishna consciousness, there is transformation of the person doing it. So if we want to make rapid advancement in Kali Yuga, in bhakti, then we have to engage in preaching. So when we engage in preaching activities, distribution of prasadam, distribution of Srila Prabhupada, especially Srila Prabhupada's books, and by creating facilities where people can hear, that's very important. By creating the right environment for people. You know, we can't just say people are not coming. You know, we have to see why they're not coming. So we have to see what we are doing, what we are not doing to make them come. So we have to look at the environment, we have to look at, are we creating the right mood for them, the right ambience? Are we presenting it appropriately for them? You know, it has to be, is what we are presenting, is it relevant to them? Or it's irrelevant? Yesterday I went to collect the mail, and there was one card, and there was a picture on that, and that picture was a lecture theater, and there were so many seats there. And it said on that, the first step to an attentive audience is a good seat. Good seating is the first step to achieving an attentive audience. So then I gave that to Prabhudas, if they want, you know, because this was a business, and they especially deal with charities, and they said for Salvation Army we put, you know, a really nice lecture theater, and we put very nice seating. So if we want to use it, so they approached us also if we want any seating. So that's a very good point, I thought. The first step to an attentive audience is to have a good seat. In other words, to make them comfortable, to set the right ambience. And so that's what outreach is also about, to make people comfortable so they can hear Krishna Katha. The end thing is Krishna Katha. The format of any preaching is the same, basically. We do kirtan, we give a lecture, when we have prasadam. and we make friendship. So, but different audiences, they have different needs. So we need to tailor our product accordingly. We need to package it accordingly. That's all. And then when they engage in Krishna Katha, that will purify their heart. So I'll leave it here. You have any questions or comments? Yes, Prabhuji. Okay, so question is, devotee is saying they are trying to be Krishna conscious, but they are still suffering. Yeah, you can say, well, you're suffering so that you get purified. Your suffering is to purify you, because Krishna is giving certain amount of suffering so we can become detached from this world. So suffering is required. Actually, suffering is important. You know, easier said than when one is going through it, then it's, one might think like that. But if there's no suffering in this world, then the living entity won't be any impetus to be Krishna conscious if there's no suffering. So when there's suffering, then people wake up. You know, they start, at least they become a little philosophical. And the example is when people go to a cemetery or to a funeral, crematorium, you know. So then one becomes, when one sees the suffering right in their face, then they become philosophical. And they ask about big questions about life. And when they leave, then again, you know, back to normal. But at least for that time, they became philosophical and inquisitive because suffering was in their face. So the suffering is there because suffering leads to knowledge. Suffering leads to jnana. That, you know, why am I suffering? You know, what's the purpose of life? So for devotees, the suffering is there, so we take our devotional service more seriously. So if one has a good foundation, if one is reading Prabhupada's books regularly and hearing, if the foundation is good, then one can take suffering in the proper mood. But if the foundation is lacking, if one is not one is lacking of knowledge, you know, of these texts, then when one is suffering, then it will shake one's faith. So there's the Uttama Adhikari, Madhyam and Kanishka. So the Kanishka, their faith is weak. They have faith in the supreme goal, Krishna. But what distinguishes them from the Madhyam and the Uttama is that the Madhyam and the Uttama, they have a strong faith. So whereas the Kanishka, their faith is weak and their knowledge is also weak. So generally it's because the knowledge is weak, the faith is weak. Generally, yeah. So we need to strengthen our transcendental knowledge, and then we should have a stronger faith. And when adversaries come, which they will come, because that's the nature of this world, then one can see it in the proper way and not get discouraged by it. And that will give rise to knowledge, and you know, that's what will happen. So any other questions?
Even the higher devotees, they still want the same thing.
Higher devotees?
Higher people at the higher level, like,
yeah.
They still want the same faith or like
same.
Same
problems? Yeah, look at the Pandavas, they are pure devotees. See what they went through. So, but Krishna, so one might ask, if they're so exalted, why are they suffering? In our eyes. Actually, they're not suffering. But in our eyes, why are they suffering? And Krishna puts them through adversaries to glorify them. So like Krishna put the Pandavas through such, and gave them such obstacles because, and the end result was they became so glorious. The Pandavas, now we chant their glories. Right? And Prabhupada went through so many tribulations, trials and tribulations. So, and why? Now everyone is glorifying Prabhupada. If Prabhupada, you know, became a rich man and spread Krishna consciousness like that, maybe he won't be glorified to the extent he's glorified you know, now, for what he went through. So Prabhupada, he suffered 2 heart attacks, he was paralyzed, and then, you know, he had no money, and he was even, the person who was staying with, he, you know, kicked Prabhupada out, basically. You know, he had a mental fit, and Prabhupada left the place. Then Prabhupada went with Mukunda Maharaj, and they found Prabhupada the place. So these are all, you know, so many trials and tribulations. And Prabhupada, then he suffered a stroke also in America. He was very unwell. He came to India. He recuperated. So, you know, one can say Prabhupada suffered, but actually pure devotees don't take it like that. And Krishna does that to glorify them. So, does that answer your question? Yeah, so it will happen to us also. Yes, Prabhu.
Yeah, I realize when suffering, you don't feel like enjoying the senses when you're suffering. So it's like a medicine, like you said, that brings detachment from the world. If you're not enjoying the senses because you're suffering, then naturally that part of your brain will be activated, your intelligence will start to contemplate the situation. That's why, like you said, that it brings a yarn. Because in that moment of helplessness, when you're suffering and your intelligence is not absorbed in sense gratification, then naturally the intelligence is going to be absorbed in something higher, just naturally, just by detaching yourself from sense gratification. So it's like a purification, like you said. It's a medicine that the living entity has to go through. Because actually, like Prabhupada says, that the material happiness naturally brings material distress. So when you're happy, then you're not really contemplating things, the reality, as they are in the material world, because you're absorbed in a dream, in the illusion of the material world. You know, you're caught up in it, and you're absorbed in it, and you're enjoying the senses. You're not seeing, like it says in the Shastra, you're not seeing the tiger, and, you know, the things around you, you know, the hunter, and you're not seeing these things. You know, you're just seeing the honey and you're just focused on the honey. You're not seeing the reality of the material world. But then when that illusion is broken by suffering, then you're no longer seeing the honey. You don't care about the honey because you're being harassed. You know, even though you might be trying to taste the honey, it's useless.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that. Nicely elaborating, nicely explaining. Yeah, that's true. For devotees, they turn to Krishna because they know Krishna, they have something higher. But for materialists, because they lack higher understanding, so they again go back to their happiness. They again go back to striving for material happiness. Thank you. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.